Welcome, everybody, to The Rad Life, the only talk radio show that takes you along with host and age explorer Rod Gontos on his continuing journey of discovery into life's challenges, opportunities, options, and all the latest and greatest things that come with getting older. The Rad Life is brought to you this week by Your Home for a Lifetime, a company dedicated to empowering you to stay safely, independently, and comfortably in your own home. And now here is your host, Rod Gontos.
Rod Gontos.
Welcome, everybody. Well, we have a full house today.
Oh, my goodness. Look how many people
are
packed.
And before we even got on the air, we're already like boomeranging it and glittering it and what else? God knows what else we've been doing. Okay. We do have a full house, and sorry, people who have been waiting for the last 30 minutes for us to get on the air, but... You know, it's what happens when we try to get
it's a whole the rad bunch. Life.
Well, it's the rad life, but it's also gathering. You know, sometimes it's like herding cats. So, me included. So,
you're the big cat.
I'm the big cat. So, anyway, I really want to just get into it. I want to introduce my guests, one of whom is a returning guest. Yeah.
Right.
And a little house. You got applause? Okay, go ahead.
All right.
Thank you.
Thank you, everybody. Okay.
So I want to just do a little housekeeping.
We close the door and shut them out.
Okay, a little housekeeping. So if you're listening to us on octalkradio.net, you're clicking the Listen Live button. You can also see us on OC Talk Radio's YouTube station and Facebook page, as well as the Rad Live Facebook page. And if you are watching us right here, Monica. Woo! Say hello, Monica.
Hi.
Hi. And then Rashad over here. We're all in the camera.
I was a guest before.
Yes, you were. I'm sorry. Can we get another round of applause for another
time?
More applause. Open the door over there.
I believe in affirmations.
Okay.
They haven't stopped applauding out there.
Oh, they're still applauding. Okay.
Okay.
And then we got a guy trying to get into the show for so long, and he has finally showed up. So, I don't know. Do you have any other sound effects that we can? No. Oh, God. He does.
I've been playing hard to get.
Okay. Right. Actually, he's more like drop the mic time.
So I don't know.
Have to look for that. Okay. So Rashad here, who is also my partner in crime on the air. Partner in crime on the Arab American Civic Council, an organization out of Anaheim, and we'll talk a little bit about that. Oops. And then the first round of applause went to Tarek Rishik, who is basically a friend from high school. He was a guest last week, and I enjoyed our time so much that I said, come on back.
Thank you, everybody. Great to be back.
And thanks, everybody, who listened and gave us good feedback
last week
also when Tarek was here. So primarily, I wanted to talk about a few things. We want to talk about, we touched on it a little bit last week, the DACA issue with the Dreamers, but also more so like a larger picture is things that are changing in that relation to how we deal with refugees, immigrants. You know, this is very much part of our life. I don't think you can put your head in the sand and ignore it anymore. It's everywhere around us. We have always had refugees. We've always had legal aliens. We've always had people that have, you know, sought citizenship and moving to the United States. And California is a big draw for a lot of people, right?
I thought our exchange, though, before the show was perfect. I said, speaking for all of my friends back in the Midwest, we don't want any of those stinking refugees anymore here. And you said?
I said, go ahead.
You said,
no, I want to know if you heard me.
You said, well, then we should stop starting wars all over
right,
the world.
Stop starting wars, right. Yeah, peace, right?
Stop using gas.
That was like, and Paul immediately went into his Woodstock routine after that, right? So, but no, seriously, I mean, it's
that's really what it's all about in a nutshell.
It's a consequence of our engagement or other engagements that we maybe are part of. Unrest in different parts of the world, and that's always been the case in the United States. We had in California, in specifically Orange County, with the boat lift from Vietnam, right? And then we had Cambodians, right? And so the largest concentration of Vietnamese, I think, outside of Vietnam is in Orange County, right?
World Relief that we work with, they actually brought 75,000 refugees in the last 35 years.
But can I speak for all my white, old, aging Midwesterners
out
there?
You keep speaking for them. First of all, no. But if you do, we're shipping you back to the Midwest. Leave the keys to the station.
And the point is that, for example, in Minneapolis, where I was born, similarly, the church has brought a huge Somali population back there.
Right. And Italians and the Irish.
Right.
Before
but look at how the challenge, how integrating that group into the community hasn't been as successful. They're so starkly different than everyone else, and not just the way they look, but religion and everything else. Now Minneapolis has the highest group of people leaving the country to go join ISIS.
I'll tell you something, Paul. It just struck me.
Yeah.
There's a little bit of white privilege going on over there.
Well, I'm speaking. I'm speaking, unfortunately, for the group I don't want to be allied with, but that I was born into and voted for Donald Trump. Yeah,
if I may interrupt, actually, there's no better place in the world for refugees than the United States, and the refugees that do come to this country assimilate more than any other country.
Correct.
Maybe except for the Canadians, but the Canadians.
But then they're Canadians.
But the Canadians actually encourage people to be different.
Oh, Monica's
in the U.S.
You're not Canadian.
Really,
and I completely agree with you, but I'm telling you that my friends and family back in the Midwest would violently disagree with you. They say that in Detroit has the largest Chaldean population, that refugees from Iraq. Minneapolis has the largest Somali population. Orange County has the largest Vietnamese population. And in none of those areas, there's still a large group of people that say, I'm not so sure that we should have brought them over in mass.
To put it in perspective, I mean, I'm comparing it to the rest of the world.
Right.
The rest of the world
doesn't want any refugee.
No place is better for assimilation than the United States.
And the
CEO of Microsoft is Indian.
Yeah.
I think we're confusing causation with correlation. You know, I think sometimes, yes, refugees come here, but the fact that youth are disenfranchised, aren't being integrated, might have more to do with white supremacy, with being socially excluded, with their religion not respected.
Right.
And so then they don't have a place to call home or to belong. And belonging is a key factor of resilience. And so then they don't have the resilience to cope. And so somehow a country 3,000, 4,000 miles away is more aligned with them than where they grew up.
Right.
You don't see that in the DACA kids. You don't see that in places.
Oh, not the DACA kids. That's a whole different story. But now I'll say on the flip side.
They grew up here in a community that is.
Oh, but I'm sorry. You know, I'm going to have to just kind of draw the line here a little bit.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. What the heck? This country, I understand there was a big push in that elected Trump out of the Midwest, right?
Right.
But you know what? There's more to this country than the Midwest. And the Midwest, sorry for all your friends that are basically in Michigan
that are
all feeling like
Minnesota,
they're basically
Wisconsin.
Their back is up against the wall because they're being encroached on by refugees. There's a huge Lebanese population that moved in there and worked in the automobile industry years and years ago. Khalil Gibran. Okay, people like that. There's a huge influx of Middle Eastern immigrants that came to this country legally, that worked in industry, that became reference as far as whether you're Indian or Arab, Middle Eastern, that basically succeeded and thrived and actually contributed quite a bit to this country. So if you're a white feeling under, you know, treaded upon Midwesterner that is looking at your life somehow being impacted by all these people, my question to you is, what have you done to contribute?
Yeah, but in Paul's defense.
I'm sorry,
Paul was not saying that that's how he feels.
Exactly.
That's what he's saying, like, with his family.
No, I'm embarrassed. I'm embarrassed.
Because
by
they're not knowledgeable enough. I mean, one of the most influential technology person in this country is of Syrian descent.
Exactly.
Steve Jobs.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. Elon Musk is from South Africa. He created Tesla, and he's changing the whole
world. The guys who started Google. And
the guys, the World War II was won by Jewish Germans, and they're all immigrants from Germany.
Yeah.
They're all, I mean, immigrants.
We're
is what
all
the
immigrants. That's the
of
point.
This country.
All of us can only trace us back 2, 3, 4 generations. We all came from somewhere other than the handful of Native Americans that were here that we pushed out. The majority of this country, a vast majority of it, was brought here. And I argue that we've lost sight of that's the America, what makes America exceptional. The fact that we can bring people from anywhere, give us give us your tired masses yearning to be free.
But to Rod's word, you're referring to a minority in this country. Maybe you're referring to 25-30% of the country.
And
the majority of this country, I think, sees what we all see in this room.
Yeah.
So let me ask you
But we put a spotlight on that minority. Because it's somehow controversial. And that little minority has always been there. This is not a new thing. When you had the Irish come in, the Italians before
them, hated
not
the
in
Irish.
My own backyard.
Oh, yeah.
The Irish, basically the next wave of people that came in, same situation. So the difference today is that we basically, and maybe it's the media, maybe it's the 24/7 cycle, but we basically highlight the minority reaction to immigrants and we somehow label that as the norm when it is not.
They are the minority, but what it is, they also are the dominant narrative, though.
Yes.
And so they are the minority, but they own the media, they own the narrative. And so, like, I'll give you a quick example. My daughter was out with two friends of hers. We were out in L.A., and one friend was Japanese. And these are six-year-olds, seven-year-olds. And her Japanese friends were talking about going to Japanese school on Saturdays. And my daughter just finished Romanian school. Hmm. And so then her American friend, I mean, a white American friend, said, "Oh, man, I wish we had American school." And I looked at her and I said,
"You do.
Every day, we all go to American school. You like what history, what language, what, you know, what culture are you teaching in American school?"
So where does that come from, Monica? Where did that child basically get that from?
Yeah, well, it's just the blindness to seeing that there is a dominant. I mean, you don't see what is right in front of you, right? You don't see the forest for the trees. And so she didn't see that. All of this is American, and yeah, somebody has to pay extra to go, or a whole week of your summer to go to Romanian school to get a little bit of your culture.
But you know, there is good news here. I mean, the trend is towards more assimilation.
Yes,
the trend is that eventually
we aren't ready yet.
I think I'm going to be the positive one here. I think
that's why he's here. Actually,
that's
his role.
Yeah. No, I think with communication and with the whole social media and with people just being more aware of what's going on in the world, we are assimilating more. We are becoming one people. We are, like, of course, what happened with the Trump movement that kind of affected
nativist, xenophobic, hate foreigners.
There's an exaggerated fear.
Trump,
there's
Russia,
I'm speaking.
Okay. Thank you, Rob. There's an exaggerated fear fed by mainstream media, Fox News, right-wing news that is Islamophobic, that is xenophobic, anti-Arab, anti-refugee. And the reality is most refugees from the Middle East that are coming here are handpicked. Like, they're We're far away.
Two years of processing.
No, we're far away from the Middle East. We're not getting an influx of refugees the way neighboring countries Lebanon, Turkey,
Jordan. And that's an excellent point.
Even Europe. But here in America, we're getting a few refugees, and they're handpicked, and there's a 2-year process of a background check
to qualify.
Why is that story not told? Now, I'll tell you. Just anecdotal evidence. Rad did a show on that. I didn't realize. I think I'm more educated and informed than most people are in my community, or right, in the general Midwestern community. Okay, right? I shared that with some of my friends. I shared that with hosts that came in here who are successful, white, successful business people. And they generally fear the influx of this migrants, this story that you saw in Europe where they're flooding across from Turkey and swimming across and coming in hordes, the image pictured. And I said, one, they can't do that here. You can't just walk into this country. And two, what you've just said, that to be granted refugee status, you go through a very, very highly vetted thing.
I'll tell you what we've lost focus on in this country. Sorry, Rashad. We've lost focus in this country isn't about that we're all immigrants, okay? What we've lost focus in this country is, and this is really the threat, is that united we stand, divided we fall. Well, and when we are self-imposing the division, we will fall. And we will fall regionally, we'll fall locally, and eventually we'll fall nationally. Because this attitude that is being cultivated and basically sold in mass for special interest, okay, for instant gratification special interest, in the long run, will be the demise. And in that way, we are no different than any other civilization that's come before us.
I don't disagree with that.
Part of the problem is not the lack of information or resources or knowledge that we have, but last year, we've been through a toxic election season, mm-hmm. and there was a lot of fake news going around, and fake news that coming from the right wing. Yes. And these are exaggerated fear. Politicians' campaigns are very toxic, and they're spreading news about how scary these refugees are, dangerous they are. But the fact is...
And am I the only one that was shocked? I grew up in this area. Most of my friends and relatives watch Fox News, subscribe to all this stuff you're talking about, and argue with me endlessly about it. They think I'm the outlier.
So what were you shocked by?
I was shocked at the depth of the fear that Trump was able to stoke. The Republican Party was shocked by the fear. They kept thinking he's a joke and he'll never last. And he tapped into something that the Republican Party didn't see, the Democratic Party didn't see, and I didn't see, the depth and breadth of that fear.
There's a big problem here with the media and what media covers and what doesn't cover. Are you guys aware that there was two mass murders last week? Did anyone hear about it on the news?
No.
There was about 7 people killed, and then the next day, another 8 people were killed.
Where?
Somewhere. I don't know. Look it up.
Here in the United States?
In the United States.
Okay.
Have we heard a word about it? There were 2 mass murders on the news,
okay,
and no one ever covered it.
So it's selective. They select what they cover.
It's not exciting. It's not sensational.
Well, in the middle of Hurricane Irma and everything,
If it was like an immigrant, if it was a dark person, trust me, breaking news.
Controversy, and strife.
And then Trump would go, live and say, what is going on?
Right, and if I can get some loud noise and flickering lights. And some
another statistic I want to give you is that probably, I heard something like last year there was I don't remember the exact number, but about 100 or so mass murders in the U.S., and maybe 3 of them were from immigrants or Muslims or brown people.
Again, fact-based information that really isn't sensational enough, and it flies in the face of the narrative that's being propagated that we don't basically cover it. And so all of this, I mean, and we usually do this on the show. It's like, well, what does that have to do with the people sitting around the table?
Right.
Well, there's an aspect of this that we are all faced. We all lived through last year's election cycle. Okay, we're all looking.
I'm not sure I have yet. It's still,
right.
Still trying to
some of us are still recovery. Right. We're looking at the upcoming future and the election cycle, and trying to hold on to the belief that this is a democratic country where people still, at the end of the day, in the
do
overwhelming
the right thing.
Thing, will do the right thing and morally correct thing, right, and all this stuff, and be representative of what that means to the rest of the world. You know, maybe we drank too much Kool-Aid. Maybe we really want to believe that, right? But the point is, we all went through that.
Right.
And I think if I'm looking around the room and from what I'm hearing, at the very least, most of us, if not all of us in this room, are disappointed, that are frustrated, are feeling like we lost something going through that last year.
Oh, I think
is that fair?
I think it's very frightening. If this trend continues, what does it do? It tears the country apart.
So what do you do about that as an individual? What do you do that on a local level, in the street, down the street, not through necessarily an elected position? What do you do? And these two people right here, sitting in the room with us, Monica and Rashad, took action.
Yes.
Towards that in a manner that was very real and sort of almost, it can be politicized, but I think it's just very human. And basically, how many weeks ago was it with World Refugee Day?
That was in June.
World Refugee Day in
another
June.
Day, to Tarek's point, I didn't hear about
World Refugee Day. Yes,
I didn't hear that on Fox News.
June 20th every year.
So put it on your calendar so next year you can actually know about it in advance. Okay, Paul, you included.
That's an opportunity to celebrate refugees and highlight their contributions to our nation.
And so
you do it year-round.
So you
didn't see that special on Fox News.
So you guys launched something that day. But you guys have been working on this for a while, right?
Yes.
And so what is it?
What is it that you launched on the 20th of June? Sounds like something.
Hold it up to the camera.
20th of June for World Refugee Day.
So June 20th. We for the last year and a half, we started working on the Refugees Welcome Guidebook.
Let me bring it up to the camera.
And who we are? I'm Monica from Activate Labs, and Rashad from Arab American Civic Council, and we're funded by the Unitarian Universalist Service Committee. They generously saw this idea and said that this is what refugee communities need.
Mm-hmm.
Since then, we've presented at a refugee summit, a national summit, and people from San Diego, from Texas.
You guys got recognized, I think, right?
Well, they were also very interested in partnering. You know, this is something that is covering different areas of integration for refugees, and so it's really valuable information.
So Monica, go through some of the sections.
Yeah,
just the titles or some of the sections of this. Yeah.
So we have three sections. So the first section is called basic services, and it's
such as
medical, childhood education for your children. Uh-huh. So when in the first 30 days when refugees come, they need to do a lot of things. There's actually a chart here.
And what drives it being a 30-day period?
What the State Department requires. So they need to get their Social Security card. They need to get their housing. They need to get food stamps. They need to get their refugee money, like financial assistance. Mm-hmm. They need to get CalFresh. They need to get their kids in school. They need to register for ESL.
So let me ask you this. Okay, so you go through this long vetting process. You make it here. You're now basically designated as a legal refugee, okay, in the United States. You're now told there's 30 days for you to accomplish all this list of things to do, right? Assuming that you speak even the language.
Well, so what? Right? You don't do it alone. I mean, I would say so like, hopefully
there,
you don't.
That was my question.
Yeah.
Is there assistance from the State Department for you to do this?
So here's a 30-day chart. It's on the second page, of course. And so the case manager, so they all come. So what happens every month or every quarter, different refugee resettlement agents, there's 9 in the country. World Relief that we work here locally was one of them. Okay. They've actually stopped applying for this process where they go and they all meet together in New York and they basically choose which refugees they want to resettle.
Why did they stop applying for this process?
The money, because uh-huh. they have a diversified income uh-huh. and they're about, I think, 19 World Relief offices had to close because they're just... The travel ban. Really, there's a limited number of refugees, and so...
Oh, so demand and supply basically.
Trump cut the number of refugees annually to 50.
Now it's about 10,000 that are going to come this year.
So that reduced the number of centers that are quote-unquote needed.
Yeah, well, I mean, you had 80,000 right. with Obama, now you have...
Obama increased it from 80 to 100,000, and then Trump cut it in half.
Okay, so as usual, though, I know that even if there are governmental services for support in situations of this nature, that there's usually a demand that way outstrips the supply or the provided services, right?
No, well, I think here the situation is that the case managers, we have 7 in the greater LA area, and they all resettle in Orange County and some.
So 7 case managers?
No, 7 refugee resettlement agencies.
Oh, okay.
Each of them have between 2 to 4.
Are they all religiously based? Like
no, IRC is International Rescue Committee is not religious. Some of them are Episcopalian, Lutheran, Catholic Charities. World Relief is evangelical.
The support service is provided through these agencies.
Yeah. Well,
on
they
behalf
get paid.
Of the State Department, basically.
So they get contracts and they say we can take in 10 this month or 5. And they get a certain amount of money, and that money goes straight to the refugees, and they take a little bit over the top for their operations.
Operations, right. But here's my question. Okay, these 7 agencies that you're talking about, okay, with their staff that they have, is that sufficient for the number of refugees even at the half, cutting it in half?
Do we need more services?
Do we need more? Are we understaffed?
I don't know if it's more services because they have a huge armies of volunteers.
Okay.
What we're talking about is either scale or depth. And so integration in a new country, there's a lot of work, trauma work, mm-hmm. a lot of tutoring for children, soccer. Yeah. There's a lot of other things that help people integrate. It's not just...
There's emotional, there's psychological, there's language.
And the case managers are only working with them for 30 days. After that, they're done. So after those 30 days...
You're on your own.
So I would just, honestly, I've worked with refugees personally, like helping resettle, and I... God bless, I will never criticize a case manager in my life.
Right.
It's one of the hardest jobs in the world because people often don't flee poverty. They flee war. And so they have higher standards of living than we even have here, some of them.
But after the 30 days, there's still help that they can get through service providers and religious institutions, social services.
So what prompted the need for this guidebook? Because I noticed also on the front cover that it's specifically to the Los Angeles area, right?
Yeah.
We'll come back around to that. But what prompted this particular tool or this the need for this particular tool?
The original prompting is when we first came to the United States. I came as a refugee from Romania. My family, I have 11 brothers and sisters.
When was this, Monica?
In 1981.
Okay.
And when I was...
Not that long
the
ago.
The fall of Ceaușescu
was 7 years, like 8 years later, and we had no idea, you know, how that would happen. Or, you know,
And you came in as refugees?
We came as refugees. My parents were religious activists and pastors, and they were incarcerated and suffered a lot for having a faith in Romania. And then also they were political dissenters, mm-hmm. you know, which went hand in hand there.
And oddly enough, probably this is under the Reagan administration, the godfather of the New Right movement here, mm-hmm. who at one time welcomed refugees from communist countries.
Yeah. So it was very politicized. But we were...
If you're from a communist country, welcome.
Family Reunification Act, 1978 Family Reunification Act was the policy that actually opened up refugee resettlement.
Okay, so you get...
So we came here and we had, you know, our neighbors, you know, mostly white Americans, they welcomed us in and it was... there's one black family, which is kind of rare for Garden Grove, but they are there and they're still there. One family gave us a list of my parents, a list of different resources. So one had the post office and maybe some congregations and a thrift store and a grocery store. And for my parents, that was one of their most precious gifts. It was this list of resources.
Tools that they were given, yeah.
Right. So they were able to help out, you know, with the 11 kids. And it was just, you know, you don't know
the language.
And did
your parents speak English or just Romanian?
Yeah, no. I mean, they, you know, Romanian, they spoke Russian. They spoke French. We spoke a lot of languages, just not English.
Right. So there was a language barrier.
They're very intelligent people. Just not...
You know, that's interesting because people assume, I have people come in the studio and say, I'm sorry, I don't speak English that well. I say, whatever language you was raised in, you speak that better than I do. Why is this notion that English is a test of intelligence? You speak five other languages, you just don't have to speak
English.
Right,
but English it's the language of communication, the kind of language you get around. Right. So you had a personal experience with something like this that benefited your family.
But let's say like 25, 30 years later, do we still need this? So just talking to refugee resettlement agencies, you know, we talked to World Relief, we talked to a lot of case managers, and what we found is, like, for example, this 30-day thing, it was just a checklist that case managers have. It was not given to refugees, so they don't know what tomorrow holds. They don't know if they're going to go get their Social Security or enroll their kids. So it felt, and they don't know if they need to do it by the 15th or if they need to do it when they need to do it.
The case manager did, but they did not.
Yeah, and so, you know, I do a peace building social cohesion work, and I would say like 90% of our trauma is because we don't know why things happen or like when things will happen, just this uncertainty. And so this was kind of the goal was if we can help people with uncertainty, then I think they're pretty resilient. I mean, I've never met people more resilient that were in war 2 years ago and now they're in Southern California with you know, palm trees. Yeah. Right. Like, that's a big resilient
And can I
resilient
emphasize
person.
That point? We've talked a little, I know it always comes back to certain things in my life, in this show, but I use it as an anecdote. I adopted a girl from Mexico who was born in a poor village and then brought here illegally and then fell into foster care because she was beat up. And suddenly she didn't speak the language, she's in a foreign country, and she's in foster care. And she bounced around for several years. And we adopted her when she was 11.
That's awesome.
And she's been my daughter ever since. She's 25 now here. And one of the things she struggles with is uncertainty. She still can't picture tomorrow very well. She has trouble remembering an appointment 3 weeks from now or that I have to be someplace.
You can't trust
because she lived with uncertainty her whole life.
Well, exactly.
And she was, in a sense, a refugee.
You know, there's an interesting thing that just occurred to me.
Not by choice.
That's why we have a calendar in the back.
Well, so what occurred to me that was just interesting is that there's a misunderstanding, I think, a misnomer for some reason, okay? And maybe it's a little elitist, to be honest, right? Is that we just assume that all these people that are coming. I mean, I'm listening to Monica. She's like 11 kids, okay?
Yeah.
Moving to a country, granted level of intelligence, involvement, you know, religious commitment, all this stuff. With no language, okay, and there's a sense on
or
this
knowledge,
side of, on this side of saying, yeah, they're just, you know, they're happy to be here,
right.
You know, they're blessed and lucky and
lucky
all this stuff, and
here.
They know that, but there's also a lot of this trauma and stress that comes along with it, and somewhere along the way we I think dehumanize refugees or people
very
that are
so.
Literally airdropped and dropped into areas that they have not no way of getting around.
That was my daughter. I mean, she was a refugee. She didn't want to be a refugee. She was brought here illegally because her grandmother was raising her, died, so she was shipped to a relative she'd never met. And suddenly she was uprooted from one life and brought here, and for the next multiple years bounced around between different houses and beat up and stuff. And that created a trauma in her that to this day she still has to deal with. And it has to do with that uncertainty. And again, Yeah, you could say, wow, she was adopted by a family and she's lucky and
all
this
great
thing.
What do you got to complain
about? What do you got to complain about?
Let's be clear. Nobody wants to be a refugee.
Nobody wants to be a refugee. Exactly.
It's not like, I can't wait to be a refugee one day.
Yay! My ambition is to be a refugee and get to the United States.
Exactly.
You guys talked about last week, very touching, I thought, about your parents' journey out of Palestine and being Palestinian refugees and the difficulty.
I mean, who wants to go to another country and be a minority and not speak the language and unsure about his future, anything. I mean,
that uncertainty, and that's
subject to being deported.
I gotta just say, I'm so, so proud of you guys. I mean, for what you've done.
You should really
be like, everyone should be like, salute you guys for what you did.
Because you took action. You didn't just talk about the problem. You did something.
Yeah, 250.
Is this available? I see it's got Arab writing in the front. Is it available to Romanians? Is it available to other languages?
Well, before we go there, because it's an interesting development that's come out of this that I am aware of for these guys they've shared with me. But, okay, so that was the original impetus, right?
Yeah.
How do you go about basically getting something like this funded? Because, I mean, it took you, how long did you guys work on this?
A year and a half.
Yeah, it's a year and a half of commitment and with volunteers.
How does it get funded? You go to our website and
But you got...
What is the website? You brought it up now here.
Is it on the Refugees Welcome Guidebook or are we going through the Arab American Civic Council?
Where do you want to send people to donate for this project?
You can do it through refugeeswelcomeguide.org.
You could donate online.
Refugeeswelcomeguide.org. Right.
But actually, that's how it started, was us running a Razoo campaign.
Recognized the need based on your own personal experience.
And you actually
went out yourself to try to get it funded.
What's a Razoo? I don't know what Razoo is.
It's like Indiegogo.
It's a crowdfunding...
For nonprofits, mostly. Yeah. So it has a really lower rate. Than
like a GoFundMe.
Yeah. I think what we decided is, so I do international work, you know, we get paid, we do get contracts, you know, Rashad worked for SAC, you know,
What's SAC?
Oh, Syrian American Council.
Okay.
Yeah.
Right.
So, I mean, we understand that, you know, work should be paid, but we also said, you know, we live here.
Right.
It's our time. It's our gifts, our talents. So we're just going to do it whether we make the money or not.
Right.
Like, it travels, not going to cost. I mean, we could pay for gas. You know, we could just pay. So what?
All you darn young people, we're just going to do it. We're not going to worry about how to do it and where the money comes from. We're just going to do it. I hate this whole world.
They raised the money.
They did it. I wish we could have done this 20 years ago.
Before we did that, the reason why we collaborated is because, first, she had that idea, but also because I did something that is very different from this, but similar in some ways, which was a guidebook and a brochure for Little Arabia, Anaheim's Little Arabia enclave, the business district. And we were distributing it to tourists that come to Anaheim, as well as community and new immigrants that are in the community in Anaheim. So when she saw that, she's like, we should do something similar, but for refugees, something larger. And
could we have a sound effect?
Open the door again. Open the door again. They're still applauding out there. They haven't stopped.
Close the door. Too many. They're coming on us.
No, Tara, you're absolutely right. I mean, I couldn't be prouder. I mean, the reason why I wanted to showcase this is here's something where we are inundated every day with so much bad news and things that are not working and you'd be feeling overwhelmed and not being able to take action to the point of where you're paralyzed. And all you're doing is basically you're in a depressed state in the corner rocking to try to find a happy place, right? And then here's a situation.
That's where I've been since
which
Trump
is
got
very,
elected.
Very current, very timely, very almost controversial. And the actions of two people to initiate this.
Just do it.
And it drew other people, drew other resources, but here we are looking at, how many pages is this thing, roughly?
And what kind of funding did you raise through these crowdfunding?
About 100 pages.
120
pages.
And how much funding did you raise, roughly?
In English and in Arabic.
Can we tell?
We are half funded what we wanted to.
So what was your goal?
So we estimated around $100,000 for two of us to do it we wanted to do it. But anyway, it's been a year and a half, 2 years almost now.
And you've got half of that funding already through
The Unitarian Universalist, the Unitarian Universal Service Committee. So we did on crowdfunding, and they saw us. I have a college friend, actually, from Brandeis that saw it, and she's like, oh, this is interesting. So she brought it to her board at the Unitarian Universal Service Committee, and they really saw an opportunity. And so really they gave us wings. I would say that, you know, they seeded a lot of it to become a reality, because it could have been – you know, for furry, we would have probably taken 5 years easily because it's just, you know, it's...
But you guys are the real heroes, I just got to say.
I agree.
I had a chance to go over, actually, book...
I sent it to
Oh, awesome, yeah.
And the way it just, like, gives you clarity when you walk in and the housing available and then, the way they guide you where to go and you have workers come to your house.
All of you guys have a refugee experience except me. I have it through my daughter. You through your parents or you through your life or whatever. I don't understand, and I'm going to tell you that 90% of my family and friends back in the Midwest do not understand.
We don't like them, by the way. The more you talk about them,
you shouldn't, because they're the ones that don't want any of you here. No, I'm sorry.
I think what I'm starting to get is he doesn't like them.
I don't like them. So I'm embarrassed.
He's embarrassed by them.
I do, but I'm telling you, I don't understand enough, and I know the rest of this group that voted for Trump doesn't understand enough. Not just about the vetting that goes into it. We've talked about that, to become a refugee.
Right.
But the experience that happens. For example, okay, once you are given refugee status, which is a legal status, are you a citizen of the United States?
No. Yeah, of course. No, you get in. Yeah, no. You get in. It's 5 years.
The process.
So you become. It's a 5-year process.
Okay, I didn't know
that.
But
you get a green card. You get a green card the first. I mean, yeah. That's what you get a green.
And what would keep you from completing it? I mean, do you have to have a good... You can be a criminal, obviously, in that period, I suppose, or something. There must be ways that you can lose that refugee status in that 5-year period, or no, once you're granted it.
Oh, I mean, if you're a felon.
I don't know.
You could be deported. We have family members deported back to Romania.
If you get 2 DUIs, you're out of here.
Okay.
Well, I mean,
I don't know. I mean,
no,
is it that simple?
No, but it's a good question because the assumption is that you have a green card, you're guaranteed citizenship.
Yeah.
No. Okay, or if you have a green card, that, you know, or that you're immediately a citizen, you're not. I mean, has everybody gone through this process in the room?
Yes.
Pretty much everybody.
We're all naturalized.
No, naturalized citizens. Right.
And so, I don't know what it means to be a naturalized citizen.
Right. Exactly. So enough with the white privilege, okay?
No, I'm trying to understand.
He's not having white privilege. He's actually being sincere.
No.
I really don't understand.
He's a little rough on you.
He's
the average Joe listening. Needs our input.
But I think Paul's... I just wanted to say one thing. I think Paul's experience is actually really valuable because what he did through his adoption of his daughter, he got skin in the game.
Yeah.
And I think that's the answer to America, is getting skin in the game. Like, how close are we to the pain?
I had a reason why I was building it up this way, okay? Tell you why. Because Paul constantly makes reference to the Midwest, right? Do you know that my uncle, who was a kidney specialist, okay, came to the United States in 1965 or 1964, okay, lived in Chicago, has done nothing but be in Chicago, taught in Northwestern, had businesses there. My other uncle, his twin, has been there for 30 years. And I have aunts, my grandparents, all that stuff, okay? I spend a ton of time in the Midwest, okay? I don't know what neighborhood you're talking about, because the Midwest that I know is actually extremely warm. Now, if you want to talk about the human fear factor of things that you do not understand and you do not know, that is something that I think is universal, and that is something we can do something about.
Rod, what I witness as outsiders is not the same as him hearing it straight from his family.
My point is this. We are perpetuating the same stuff that is part of the problem, which is that we are painting with wide brushes of people.
But I'm trying to get
saying these people are not sensitive. These people.
I'm trying to get you to understand, though, that otherwise
that there's another side.
And here's the dilemma. I'll go one deeper. Okay.
Well, we made it a demographic, and we regionalized it, and that's my point is this was not a right.
By the way,
they did elect Trump. You know, they did rise
other
up.
Other people did too down the street, dude.
I know, but they pushed him over.
That is true.
And
by the way, I went to school also in the Midwest. I went to school in Illinois. Yeah.
Did you?
Peoria, Illinois.
That's the Midwest.
You know, the hub of all immigrants.
I didn't get any. I didn't, as you said.
That's you just leave it on the ground.
I didn't see any.
Oh, that's your phone. So, all right, but let me just flesh that out a little bit.
That's what I was trying to say.
Because your assumption is that these people who voted for Trump are crazies, okay, and that the majority of people don't think like they do.
I think they're racist.
And they're racist and everything. And I'm going to tell you.
Well, here we go. We're painting them all in a brush.
Okay. No,
a lot of them are.
Racism is a human condition, guys.
Yeah,
the degree of racism is what...
Right.
What
well, we talked about
so here's what shocks me.
The reality is there are a lot of immigrants affected by Trump's policies that voted for Trump, too.
That's right.
Yeah.
And so here, a lot of within the groups of the people that are supposedly discriminated against are racist within their own group.
Oh, sure.
Okay, here's a fact for you. I think we're all racist.
Yes.
You know we are. Yes. Everybody's racist.
You all start from that point. What you consciously decide to behave like, that's what you have control
of. But here's what you don't understand unless you grew up where I grew up.
See, I told you we're going to talk about spirituality and awareness.
I thought these were good people. They're religious people. The same people that supported the influx of immigrants from Somalia when the country was devastated, or from Central America when they were under communist oppression, or from Romania where they were under what we saw as communist oppression. These are, and here's the dichotomy. American religious groups that are strongest in the Midwest and in the South brought these immigrants into these communities.
Right. Correct.
The Baptists brought us,
Baptists, Catholic, I'm a Catholic, Catholics,
Catholic Church,
Episcopalians, Unitarians, all these other groups brought these the people that brought the good-natured people that brought the Vietnamese into Orange County here.
Right.
And then those same people in those same churches are the ones that went, oh, my God, I'm horrified. These people aren't like us.
Yeah. Okay, but the communists were painted very much like the Muslims are today.
Right,
so
exactly. Good, very good, very good.
We weren't communists. We were anti-communists.
Yes,
so then we were the good people.
You were the good people.
But if Muslims are fleeing Muslim countries,
now I got complicated. Exactly right.
Did we forget about the anti-Castro Cubans?
Yes.
And that within those boatloads of people that were anti-Castro were also people that were both good and bad?
Because he stuffed a bunch of criminals in the boats.
But it wasn't just that. Human beings come in all shapes and colors.
Everybody wants freedom and liberty. Right.
So we've gone hot and cold on this refugee issue. When we feel that they're freedom-loving people like us fleeing oppression, we welcome them. But when they show up and don't have the same color skin or the same religion or the same language, we fear them. And this has been an American characteristic since the beginning.
Well, as we said earlier, the media kind of contributes to that.
I'm shocked at the number of people that I grew up with that I thought that are. And I grew up in an affluent area, affluent suburbs. That are
okay,
therefore
now he is using white privilege.
No. Well, you know, because these are the people that are supposed to know better.
See,
these aren't
told
just.
You.
And I also come. My other side of my family is all dumb factory workers.
To rub it in.
So what's wrong with factory workers? Come on.
Well, that's why they're portrayed back there. These are the people that
he's discriminating within his own family.
Exactly. Oh yeah. No, but I'm just
dumb factory workers on one
there's
side.
There's the dumb
and
factory
white
workers and there's the suburban elitists. That's the two groups I came up from the Midwest here.
You know, he is right. You are right. He's sort of the poster child, isn't he?
I am. So. I'm telling you that I'm shocked at the number of these people who have now suddenly turned into, maybe they always had some fears, but they've turned into this ugly American that elected Trump. I'm shocked.
Yeah, but
think this is just going to go away, and I'm telling you it's deeper than you think it is.
Okay, so but
deeper than I thought it was.
I did say we're going to mention this, right?
Yeah.
Okay. We're going to mention this. I said the lay of the land in the United States, and it's not because of the change of demographics and ethnicities and all that stuff. That is part of it, right?
Right.
But I think in this midst of all this chaos, in the midst of this backlash against, from a position of fear and maybe the election of a very controversial figure that's very polarizing, right? my contrarian side, I think it's healthy. Because if we go, you agree?
100%.
Okay. Because if we go through this, okay, and this is two people that are not necessarily themselves refugees or immigrants, but have a linkage to that one generation back. Okay.
Right.
This is healthy for this country.
Naturalized Americans, you came here from somewhere.
But even before, we're bringing that baggage with us. We all bring our baggage with us, right? So I think this is good, and I think the we're going to see it personally here in Orange County, okay? We have a demographic that is changing where we political party superiority, if you will, or dominance is dwindling. You've got 30%.
Meaning Republicans,
it's under 40% in Orange County.
The Democratic Party
isn't really growing. It's growing, but very, very.
It's not picking up that people.
Right, but 30% and growing of the people that are registered voters are independent. Now, they may lean left or they may lean right.
I think it's bigger than that, actually.
Right, but it could very well be, right? I mean, the thing about it is when you abandon a party loyalty, when you abandon a club of which you are a member, when you basically say, I am not going to vote based on the agenda of the agency that are basically telling me to be part of, right?
Right.
What's the Groucho Marx?
I don't want to be part of a club that will have me as a member.
Right. So basically, what's happening now is you consciously make a decision to abandon that loyalty, okay, or never go there. Okay, that's an awareness position. That's that you are aware in what you are doing by not going down the easy path of picking one out of two.
You're finally thinking.
Right? You're finally thinking, right? I mean, really, right? And there isn't like a third party that you're saying, well, I'm not going to pick A or B, but I'm going to go to C. Oh, I like their jersey or whatever, right? So here's what I think is going to happen. I think we are going to move more and more towards issue-based voting.
That's your theory.
And issue-based voter engagement. Things like refugees. Things like locally affecting, like we talk about
so
the
we'll
toll
have
road.
Ad hoc groups that some will support. I'll support you on this one, but I'll support another group on another one. We won't follow a party line.
Which is fascinating, right? Because in order for you to be a voter
that is
engaged like that, right? Mm-hmm. That means that you are actually taking upon yourself to be more educated. To be more aware. Now, you may pick one source of information versus another, or you may pick a whole bunch of them and make up your opinion. But what's happening is, to Tara's point, is you are finally thinking and engaging at that level.
And
that is a good thing.
And that is the promise and the potential of America, that what unites us, I say this over and over again, is not the color of our skin or the religion or the tribe or the country we come from or the language we speak. All those things that unite people in other parts of the world. What unites us is supposed to be an idea. And the idea is threefold: freedom, equality, and opportunity. You agree on those three things, you're part of the club.
Right.
You're an American.
Right.
And that is the country was founded on. I don't know if they quite realized how many people would come to take advantage and join that club around the world. I don't know if the founding fathers really thought it would be anything but a white Christian nation.
I would say how many people would come and celebrate that, not come and take advantage.
Join the club. We draw people from around the world.
Yeah, but I think we also mentioned that briefly before the interview here, is that there's a core principle, and I'm going to get into lobbying and everything.
Go ahead.
I think there is the root of all evil.
Mm-hmm. Lobbying.
Money. Lobbying.
Let's define lobbying, right.
Okay. Oh. It's lobbying in other countries around the world.
Yeah, people are seeing you waving on that. Okay.
Lobbying around the world is considered bribery.
Yes.
lobbying is legalized bribery. In other countries, most
influence.
Countries in the world, I don't know if I'm connected.
Yeah, you are.
Most countries in the world, that's considered a crime and you go to jail. Unfortunately, our system is built on it. Whether it's the gun lobby, whether it's the tobacco lobby, whether it's like the meat lobby, the dairy lobby, whatever it is really the major, major problem in this country, which destroys everything. Where basically what I want to do as a representative is what's good for my money source and not what's good for my constituents.
Exactly.
I don't know if you guys noticed, but most representatives around the country get 90% of their funding from special interests and not from their constituents. So whatever you care about or whatever you care or I care, it's not important to them.
And that was the point I was trying to make Rod offline.
Right, being advertised to and you're being marketed to.
Okay, so Rod's point that he wants to always get into is this: Orange County is changing, the demographic's changing, 30, 40, 50% of the people are not identifying with a party, and how that's going to impact things. And I'm arguing with Tarek saying that may not change a whole lot in the short run because the representatives we have aren't listening to us.
Okay,
they're listening to special interests.
But again, it depends on how you define your time span, your movie, right? Is it a snapshot or is it a reel? Before we continue on this, Monica has got to leave, so say goodbye, Monica.
Bye, everyone. It was awesome. I want to come back.
And how do people get hold of you?
You can go to my website, activatelabs.org, and email me from there.
Let's take a commercial. We'll let everybody bug out, and we'll be left.
Are you leaving?
Yeah, I'm sorry.
Okay, so we're losing two people, but I appreciate you guys being here.
Thank you.
It was awesome.
Super.
Absolutely. Okay. Thank you so much, guys.
And you guys are both, the door is open. You guys are both welcome anytime.
Let's run a commercial, and we'll let everybody flee. We'll let you be refugees and flee.
Okay. Ouch.
Imagine what it would feel like to lose everything: your job, your home, your family, your dignity. This has happened to thousands of the men, women, veterans, and young adults we serve at Working Wardrobes. What do we do to help? We provide career development services, life skills workshops, job skills training. We provide the perfect interview outfit, and we get clients placed in jobs. Call Working Wardrobes, 714-210-2460. Donate, volunteer, invest, hire.
When it comes to pioneers in their respective industries, we all know the Apples, Starbucks, and Trader Joe's of the world. In the realm of recruiting, Decision Toolbox is the industry's best-kept secret. With 90% of their business from referrals and repeat customers, for over 20 years, Decision Toolbox's U.S.-based team of recruiters, sourcers, professional writers, quality personnel, and tech support has perfected a Six Sigma approach to talent management. No matter the size of the project, Decision Toolbox delivers incredible results. A cost per hire less than half of what contingency firms charge. With the winning candidate presented in an average of 14 days. All with a 12-month candidate warranty. With results like that, Decision Toolbox won't be a secret for long. Visit us at www.dtoolbox.com for more information.
All right, like the refugees situation, they fled our studio here,
so left us alone. So you know what? I need you to stick out your hand.
that was a bad joke.
Did you go to Catholic school?
I did.
Okay, where's your ruler? Stick out your hand. I'm going to smack you. Do you have a sound effect? I'm gonna do it right here. Okay, smack. Okay, Paul, stop acting in your white privileged self and basically attacking refugees. People leave a room and you call it fleeing, okay?
Yeah, well, we're talking about refugees. I just thought that was kind of, you know.
Yes, I know. It's comic relief. But this is serious stuff. This is stuff you can basically listen to a biased one way or the other, whether your bias of choice is MSNBC or CNN or Fox News or whatever. I've always believed,
or OC Talk Radio.
OC Talk Radio. No, OC Talk Radio is not biased. We're belligerent, but we're not biased.
I like that.
We're belligerent.
Belligerent, yes. Not biased.
Yes. There's screaming talk radio, and then there's belligerent talk radio.
Which is mean.
Yeah, we got to take it up to the next notch because it's all about sensationalism. But truthfully, okay, if you want to exercise, as far as I understand it, as a person who sought to be here, okay, because of what the promise of America is, mm-hmm. if you choose to exercise your right and responsibility as a citizen in the United States or as a green card holder seeking citizenship, the number one thing that you can do as a favor to this country is to educate yourself.
And educate others around you.
And open your mind to opposing opinions, because that is the only way that you test your resolve in your position, as well as basically increase your knowledge base about other people's positions. Without that, you are in a bubble. We all fall victim to this on occasion. We all get lazy. We all get too tired. We have too many things that basically draw on our time. Kids, family, you know, I got to drop people off. I got to basically make it there on time. Today, in today's world and in today's United States, we are so inundated with information that the one tool, the one skill set to develop is the ability to filter through it. But keep yourself open, okay? The minute we stop talking to each other, the minute we stop looking at each other as humans, equal, with opinions that should be regarded, is when we start basically down that demising path of like every other civilization that has fallen. Okay, you owe it to this country to exercise that brain and think and educate yourself. This refugee book, which stemmed from an idea, stemming from a personal experience, Monica, who was in the show, okay, is 115, 120 pages of hope.
And by the way, this whole project is not simply a guidebook that will be handed out only, because it's part of a larger campaign. It's part of a larger campaign.
So what else do you have planned for this?
Refugees Welcome campaign. So part of it is to educate our communities, is to go to congregations, talk to them about refugees, give refugees the voice. So on several occasions, we would take some of the families that were that came here as refugees to go and
share their own experiences.
Congregations share their experiences, and also we've done several Refugees Welcome dinners where we hosted.
Yes, and you know what? We should give a shout out to our buddy at the Olive Tree.
Yeah, Alan.
So, Alan.
Shout out to Alan and Abu Ahmed.
Yeah,
who hosted three of those Refugees Welcome dinner, where we had several refugee families from Iraq, from Syria, from Afghanistan, and over 100 community members that came just to meet them, just to welcome them.
To break bread.
Exactly. I would love to go to one of those, because, to my point, and I know Rod jumped all over me when I said this, but you all assume that the whatever this group that I represent that I came from, this group of white middle Americans here, I don't know any refugees other than my daughter now, who I took in.
Paul,
none of my none of my friends know refugees, and they don't. They have never met a refugee. They don't know what it goes into become a refugee. They don't know it takes 2 years to get it vetted. They don't know the process of what happens to become green card. They don't know anybody that's ever held a green card. 99% of the people I'm talking about.
But here's the funny thing about
they were refugees three or four generations ago.
Here's the hilariousness about what you're saying.
What?
I'll tell you what the hilariousness is, okay? It's not like, wait a minute, I need to go meet refugees. I know they hang out around on the corner of Sunflower and Harbor, okay?
Right.
When was the last time you asked somebody in your neighborhood, that somebody who is new maybe to your circle of contacts, when was the last time you actually asked somebody?
Well, you're saying they don't go out and seek them, but my point is
so
this.
When you say you don't know them, I bet you they're around you. You just haven't looked at
but
them.
But you're
that
missing
way.
The whole point then. If I don't know a refugee, if I don't know Martians, if suddenly there's an influx of Martians into America here,
and it's
easy to demonize this group of people and to make assumptions of who they are, what they're on welfare, they're terrorists, they're this, they're bad, they're taking our jobs.
They have pointy ears, and their name is Spock.
Okay, whatever all these things that get there. The only way to get rid of that is to get out and meet Martians, and then to say, hey, they're just like me. They're not bad people. To hear these stories that you're talking about, and the fact that those stories aren't, you can blame my crowd for not going out and seeking those stories, but the point is they don't know those stories, so they believe the fables. They believe the stereotypes. The only way to break down a stereotype is to go meet somebody. For example, okay, my daughter's Hispanic, okay? Mm-hmm. My daughter's from Mexico.
Mm-hmm.
My dad, to the day he died, hated Mexicans.
Right.
My dad was always railing against those damn Mexicans coming across the border. I said, you mean like your granddaughter? Oh, she's different. I know her. Those other people, I don't know.
But I'm not talking about your dad. I'm talking about you. Okay,
so my dad. I'm speaking for my dad.
But let's take.
I'm speaking for my dad and all the people.
Met a refugee from Romania and a grandson of refugee right here. And
I'm not talking about me. You guys don't get it. I'm trying to give voice. I'm trying to give voice to all the people that you don't understand out there.
And I'm not talking about you
who spout this crap.
I'm not talking about you specifically, Paul. Right? Okay, but let's take it one step at a time. Okay. To be honest,
right.
I don't care what happens in the Midwest.
You better, because
no,
they're going to elect Trump again.
No, I don't. And you know why? Because I'm going to focus, just like this focused on in Los Angeles, greater Los Angeles area, right? I'm going to focus on California. I'm going to focus on Orange County. And I'm going to focus on people that I know that are within a circle ripple effect of me that basically could maybe gain a little bit of insight that maybe is not commonly something they seek, that they can then maybe turn around, get interested in, look into it, and then pass that on to their kids. Maybe they pass it on to their neighbors. That is the ambition that I have, to basically change the mind of a whole group of people that I don't know other than they are white and them in the Midwest is something. And this is what I was talking about with this, okay? We get inundated, we get depressed, we get overwhelmed and feel like it's such a mountain, okay? Like Sisyphus, we're going to try to push this stone up the hill, right? And it's going to roll on us every single time, right? Take action in your immediate surroundings. Take action in that person that's on the bus with you. Talk to the person that you're waiting at a train station for, the person that delivers your mail. I'm not even going to talk about Syrians or refugees. I mean, Rashad has more than one minority refugee experience in his culture. What's the background?
So my father's family is from Palestine.
Yeah.
So they left forcefully in 1948.
Right.
My mom's side of the family are Armenian.
Who
survived
the genocide
and then moved to Lebanon. And then my mom
survived the war.
Left this, Lebanon because of the civil war that started in Lebanon.
We got to get you to talk more into the mic there.
I was born in Saudi Arabia and moved here for school.
And here's a guy that if you wanted to just look at the blanket, you know, oh, my God. Take that box. You must be radicalized. Yeah, he's so radicalized, he worked on putting out a refugee book that helps other human beings here, okay? And he's naturalized
but
citizen.
But don't you see the power in what the power isn't just the book, but what you guys are talking about, where even within the Arab-American community, you're saying meet refugees because you may not know who they are and what they're going through and what their story is. Imagine you take that out to the greater community, the community as a whole, meet a refugee.
But that's not the majority of people that are
coming. The majority of people that come to these events are not Arab.
Okay, so whatever you're doing, I applaud that. Push that. Meet a refugee. Take a refugee to lunch. You know, adopt a kid from another country. Do all these things that will then give you sensitivity to, so that you're not just spouting this stupid stereotypical stuff.
I'm curious, Paul. This is genuinely curiosity, right? With the fact that you adopted somebody, your daughter, who happened to originate from Mexico,
right?
Okay. How much in your family dynamic do you have interaction with people that are Latino?
None. Other than, well, through her now I do, because my son-in-law and everything else. But
is it just your son-in-law's family?
Yeah.
But you know what I'm saying? You hear what I'm saying? You live in Southern California.
Everybody I know, and everybody I grew up with, and everybody I associate with, and everybody I do business with, there are very few people that don't look like me in that group.
And
I think that's typical. That's the exception. I think that's the rule.
You, which is typical Americana, right. You is Heinz 57.
Well, Heinz 57, European Heinz 57, not global right. Heinz 57.
So what I'm saying is, can you tell the difference between a Greek and Italian? Can you tell the difference between a Sicilian from Italy that has Middle Eastern blood in them?
To some groups that are fighting, that have been fighting that fight, yes, they can tell instantly. Just as I go to Ireland, they can tell the Protestants from the Catholics, and I can't tell one from the other. But they can.
But I think that's really what's fearful.
They can.
I think that's that inability to tell. Okay? Because if somebody's wearing a hijab, okay, easy.
Right.
Okay? If somebody's wearing not a hijab, is blonde, has nice features, curvaceous, and I know I'm being sexist,
right?
And basically wearing jeans, right? And
you don't know what heels. Religion they
right.
are.
So that is the basis of the fear. It's the unknown, okay? It's the I don't know if the person sitting next to me is from us or them.
Well, but if there is no us and them, if we see us all as us, which is what we're supposed to be,
right?
And if we have ever since I came to California, I've met more ethnicities than I ever imagined in my life. Where I grew up in the Midwest, there were, especially in those days, it was all lily white looking like me, buddy. There was no black, Hispanic, Muslim, anybody.
And yet, like I said to you, there's the largest concentration of Lebanese ancestry
I understand that.
In the United States.
That's changed.
Is in Detroit, Michigan.
In Dearborn.
At the time of the automobile industry, when your dad basically was working his way through
the But you don't get it.
Industry.
They're all ice. They don't live throughout the community. They live in Dearborn. That Arab-American community has isolated itself in Dearborn. You don't find them in Bloomfield Hills. You don't find them in Birmingham. You don't find them in Farmington Hills. You don't find them anywhere else. Any more than you found. That's what's different about that.
Just like the Italians and the boroughs of Little Italy in New York, and the Polish and the Polish town in Chicago, and the Cubans in parts of Miami.
Right.
I mean, this is...
So, and much more back east and in the Midwest, the ethnicities whether they self-segregate or segregate because it's easier, but they segregate in the same way the blacks and whites segregated when I was growing up as a child.
They don't necessarily segregate themselves. They want to build a community because that's where...
Around what they know.
So will you say there's
American population is actually in California. They're just not concentrated in one area.
Right.
They're scattered all around the state with somewhat of a concentration in Orange County, especially in Anaheim.
Right.
Although it's not that
well, it's like
for example, in Anaheim we have a little area. Part of what I like to do is to invite people there. You just said that we should do more of those dinners to meet refugees. We do them. And what we would like to happen, imagine if Fox News one day comes and says, we want to broadcast your refugees welcome.
Meet
without
a refugee.
Commentary,
you had some,
without
you,
negative
you had,
commentary.
You had a city council member.
We would reach a lot of people.
You had a city council member, right? Come and visit?
Yes.
Just like this week?
Yes, yes.
Yeah.
Yes. Last week, a city council member visited the entire
Little Arabia.
In Little Arabia.
Yeah.
And even at those dinners, we had a lot of folks, a lot of influential people that came and met with the refugees.
So why don't we do some shows here through this medium and say, call it, just as silly as that sounds, meet a refugee. I don't know any refugees. You guys, I just met you today, but in my circle of friends, not just in the Midwest, but even out here, it's limited. I don't come across, I don't go asking people, and I don't go looking for it. Yes, I could go out and seek it if I want to, but I don't have those associations.
You probably have met many refugees. Yeah, you just don't know that.
I probably haven't. And because what I found appealing about Southern California in general is that it's all intermixed. So yes, there are people on my neighborhood I know from other countries. I guess I don't know how they came or what their story is. The guy next door from me that's Polish. I don't know if he came here as a refugee or if he just immigrated here.
For the past few years, Garden Grove mayor was a refugee.
Yeah, but but like Tarek said, nobody wakes up and says, "I want to be a refugee."
But you don't get it. In the rest of the country, you really don't get this. I don't think you do. In the rest of the country, they fear refugees. They voted for Trump based on that, and they're not. That's not just going to go away. It's not just the bad narrative on Fox and everything. It tapped into something real deep and fearful. They're different. They're going to take something from us. They're going to bring bad things, whether they're Mexican refugees or Hispanic or Muslim refugees or whatever. This story has permeated American history. This isn't new. This acceptance of refugees, and we bring them here and we welcome them here.
The Italian speaking on the Polish.
Exactly.
The pre-Italian speaking on the Italians.
Exactly. Yeah. And somehow we've got to break down those stereotypes of what a refugee is, because we're all refugees.
So what does it tell you when this has been part of as much part of the American experience as the Statue of Liberty?
It has. It's been the ugly flip side of it.
So the irony is, right, the Statue of Liberty sits in what harbor?
New York Harbor.
Mm-hmm. Okay. What is the harbor? What is the city that basically is indicative in stories of coming to America and whatever of basically having that discrimination? New York. Okay. So in the harbor, you have a statue that says, bring us your poor, your tired, huddled masses yearning to be free. Okay. There's a statue.
Commemorating that
is the equivalent of like a monument sign telling you you're about to approach a mall, okay?
Right.
You're coming on the water, and there's a monument sign that's, here's the Mall of America, and here's this thing that says what is on sale,
right.
Okay? And it says, come on in.
And what we're looking for. We want this. We're advertising for this, right? We're advertising for it.
And then in the same town, culturally, historically, part of the narrative from day one has been this element where there's the Indians basically being removed because of beads, Man Island of Manhattan, as far back as you want to go. So what is it that we can do other than feel overwhelmed and that we are just swimming in this current that can never stop? Take action on a local level in a manner that is manageable, in a goal that is attainable. And build on that.
I never forgot one word I read, on the flip side of this. As you guys talked about last week and as others have talked about, we as a country have taken more refugees, I got to believe, than the rest of the whole world combined. I mean, we've formed a country out of refugees from religious refugees starting back at the Pilgrims and everybody else and ethnic refugees. And one hand, that's part of what's made America exceptional and great. We've found a way to bring people together from around the world and get them to live together. Okay, and to break down these ethnic and religious and tribal barriers that exist everywhere else. When Gandhi was fighting, when the Indian subcontinent broke away and was granted independence, was it going to be a Hindu nation like India, or was it going to be a Muslim nation? And it quickly turned into civil war, and that's what ended up becoming Pakistan and India, that split into two parts. And the fight that still continues to this day between those two visions. And Gandhi said, the only way to solve this is for every Hindu family to adopt a Muslim orphan and every Muslim family to adopt a Hindu. And then you will finally start to understand who they are and integrate into the world.
Ask anybody.
This is a different topic, but part of the reason why it split up, not only Pakistan and India, but also Bangladesh, is the colonial power. The
interference.
British, their interference and their strategy of divide and conquer.
Well, clearly, that's always been a
subcontinent, but also over the Middle East.
And, supposedly, Churchill said that. Right, as long as we keep them divided, they'll never unite.
But here's the parallel I was going to run. See, all those countries that we talk about, okay, had they been left to their own devices, okay, it would have either gone through a major bloodbath, and out of that would have come some sort of semblance of, I'm too tired to be fighting you, so for a period of time we're going to be at peace, right? It may last, it may not, okay? There's a factor here that is the human condition. The human condition can be very noble and can be very vicious, Okay.
Yes.
You get to make that conscious decision
among the same
which
person.
Way every day you can. Yeah, absolutely. Right. So to consider that one entity is always good and one entity is always bad is the beginning of the problem. Okay, you're painting it in a completely wrong way that what the reality is.
Because you're seeing each other as others. We're not the same. We're different.
But that's, and then to Rashad,
the minute we focus on the differences and not the similarities.
Right. United we stand, divided we fall. Right. Apply that to as a county, as a city, as people sitting in this room.
As a country.
As a country or even as a human race. Okay, that is the truth. It'll always pan out to be the truth. Okay, you have this interference that we're talking about. And it's easy for us to sit here in our ivory towers and talk about the interference that happened under colonial powers, like it's like this,
ancient history.
You might as well say King Arthur. I mean, do people understand that King Arthur is not colonial powers? Do even they have that sensitivity? Well, I saw that in Camelot. No, it's those people. Okay, that interference, that foreign interference into people, into other countries. Okay. For whatever you want to call it, national security, which is what we refer to it today.
Right.
Okay, when it's national security, how many friggin' kilometers or miles away? Okay, national security. Okay, Saudi Arabia doesn't have interballistic missiles. Okay, something happening in the Middle East, most of those countries don't have a way to basically hit us. Okay, so we're calling it national security, and then we're lumping it together with the same as North Korea. I mean, it makes no sense at all, right? Okay, we have been spared in this country that foreign interference.
Yes.
Not really last year. When you start things like Russian interference, you start seeing things where the physical boundaries that have protected us because we are this continent upon our own protected by two wide oceans. When now the information superhighway and the connectivity of the planet has eliminated the moat upon which we basically have depended, right? We are now potentially at the same risk as those other entities that either we interfered with or colonial powers interfered with, right? And that is what we have to basically be aware of. Because that narrative that you're listening to coming through Fox or coming through an international, I mean, I've been through my own friends and family. Yeah, but that where they're absorbing that from may not be a pure source, may not even be an American source. And there's no way for you to know. So to walk around with blinders on, absorbing 10-minute sound bites, you are absolutely doing yourself a disservice.
I guess the point you guys don't get is I'm so horrified and embarrassed that the people I know who I thought were religious people, good people, intelligent people, educated people, who suddenly turned into this mob of fearful, frightened of all the others, not just Muslim others, Mexican others, Chinese others, all these others, and fell into this so easily, this narrative that was either spun by the Russians to tear us apart or spun by racists or spun by right-wing media or whatever. The fact is they bought it, hook, line, and sinker. It hit something in their soul that I didn't know was still there.
But what I'm saying is you are not a victim if you bought it.
Part of
you had something to do with absorbing that. You stepped up to that bar and you ordered that drink.
Okay.
Or you basically, it was given to you free and you drank it. Okay.
But so imagine how you feel if I walked in with a...
Personal accountability is part of this equation. Right.
But I grew up with these
Trump
people.
Trump brought some ugly things to... I mean, I've lived here for... close to 20 years, mm-hmm. and the first time I've ever seen someone directly trying to
discriminate
was a few months ago when someone stopped me in the street and told me to go back to Mexico.
Yeah.
I've never been to Mexico.
Yeah, right, because you have the little darker skin.
And he said, no habla español.
Oh, and then yesterday there were graffiti in Little Arabia. On Brooker Street, anti-Muslim, anti-Arab graffiti. But the funny thing is that even within our own immigrant families, you'll have those Trump supporters.
Yeah, that's even stranger to me. I don't even know.
Strange. Absolutely.
But their reasoning is a little different, but similar in other ways because they are tired of a corrupt system. They view Washington as a corrupt system, and they bought into Trump's narrative that he is the anti-establishment.
The irony is that those people who voted for Trump or are supporting Trump because of that anti-establishment drain-the-swamp position are right there lockstep with your friends in the Midwest.
Yes. And my friends in the Midwest don't realize that He said he was going to help the factory workers. He was going to help the average Joe. And clearly what he's trying to do is help the rich, his own class, his own group of people where he feels most comfortable. Trump's never met a refugee. Trump doesn't know anybody from...
His father was a refugee from Germany. He may have not met refugees, but he's met immigrants.
Two of his wives were...
That's true.
Okay, so again, I want to remind people, okay? Take a minute and think for yourself. Do you have a problem with legal immigrants?
I think many...
Legal immigrants.
I think there are many people that do. They wouldn't have admitted it, but they do.
As strongly as you feel about illegal immigrants and voice it, would you voice as strongly a disregard or to legal immigrants?
Yes, and I'll tell you why. Because it's the question I ask that nobody ever
legal
asked.
Immigrants, not, yes, not refugees.
Totally legal. I get it.
Okay. Why?
Because legal immigrants means changing the face of America from being a white European Christian country into something else. When the legal immigrants from France, Germany, Italy, Ireland, great, no problem. Legal immigrants from Asia, from Africa, from the Middle East, we're only going to do it in a limited bunch. And since the 60s, this legal immigration system only came about in the 60s. Before that, if you could get here, you were an American, right?
I generally call what you just said, what you described as illegal immigrants, as undocumented.
I'm trying to put the spotlight on the real fact is they don't want different people.
Last November, when I went to Standing Rock and in North Dakota and met tribal elders, tribes that I've never talked or met before, and now in my view, they need to give European Americans an amnesty program.
Yes, we took the country status. Right. This country wasn't empty.
So
when
Native Americans need to give an amnesty program to white European.
So I'm
hearing a little sarcasm and facetiousness.
There's a famous shirt of showing Geronimo and all these people, and they say, been fighting illegal immigration for 200 years.
But here's my point, okay? The reason why I'm trying to differentiate this in this last statement is because most people don't break it down like that. We use labels like immigrant when we may be meaning illegal immigrant, not necessarily illegal. Hold on a second, okay. Hold on a second, okay? It's like where you have people that are maybe total supporters of Israel that paint everybody in the Middle East with the same brush. Mm-hmm. Okay, I'm a Christian, okay, Palestinian, that lived on the coastline of the Mediterranean, okay? I don't have the same background and similarities with someone who maybe is of a different faith from a different area off the Middle East. So to paint everybody in that brush, because it's easier to put everybody in that little box. I don't have to exercise my mental acuity to basically think beyond that simplicity, right? The same thing applies with immigrants. Okay, the same thing applies with refugees. Nobody wakes up and says, "Hey, I think I'll be a refugee today."
But the backlash group that Trump represents, I think, my opinion, that they're saying they want to just stop illegal immigration. I think they want to stop all immigration. I really do. I think they want to restrict it. They want to put up walls. They want to put quotas on it. They want to cut it in half. They want to shrink it down because here's the question. I've asked this.
It's never going to happen, by the way.
Can America still be America if it's not majority white, if it's not majority Christian?
Yes.
I say yes. Most of my friends would make a funny face and go, "Well, we never thought of that. It can't be. Can't be true."
So it's a majority white Christian nation. So then everybody in that group that supported Trump that doesn't happen to be Christian, and we talked about people that were even Middle Eastern.
There's some. Yeah.
Wait, hold on. What do you mean some?
The majority of Trump's followers, did you look at the stage where
he basically had a whole, you know, a whole rainbow coalition of colors because it was what needed to be shown in the visuals?
Yeah, but you look at the crowd, it's 99% white. Old white guys.
But here's the thing, okay? What's the birth rate with white Americans?
Tiny.
Okay. So how are you going to sustain this country?
We're not.
It's a mute point. We could sit here and talk for 20 years about this, and it's a mute point.
But that's the fear.
And soon our state of California will become...
That's the fear that you're fighting against. One group that thought this was their country and they were forever in power are now being pushed out.
So I got a newsflash for you. Instead of basically picking on immigrants and refugees, just go have babies.
How are they being pushed out?
They're pushed out of power. Because other people have moved into the neighborhood.
So what do you call it, Paul? What do you call it, okay, when in a democratic society, a minority of people, okay, that are basically not reproducing, okay, exercise overwhelming power over the majority? Is that still a democracy? That's the question you need to ask yourself.
Of post-imperialism, or whatever you want to think of it as. It's the dying gasp of a group of people.
And you know what happened to imperialists? For the same exact dynamics?
Same reason.
Fell apart.
Right. Imperial England held sway over the whole world.
If you talk to some Brits right now, they'll basically say, we still have a kingdom.
Yeah.
We still have an empire.
Right.
And I'm like, where is exactly that?
And are we a colony here?
Right. Are we still a colony? Right. Yeah. So my point is, there's stuff to engage in that is actually productive. As far as discussions, as far as actions, doing stuff like this, which, you know, now they're being approached by other places like San Francisco and stuff, saying, hey, could you do this
to our areas,
our region?
We would love to do this everywhere if we had the funding.
Right. And let's give out that website again, Rashad.
It's www.refugeeswelcomeguide.org.
And the people can volunteer. They can help. They look for ways of basically helping.
Absolutely.
Donate.
The way we did, other than donations and funding that we got for this, a lot of people helped with crowdsource. So a lot of the information was crowdsourced. People came in and started entering the information that we were seeking on a Google document. So a lot of this information is community driven.
So think how cool that is.
A lot of people volunteer.
How invested the community was in providing the development.
And I'll tell you, the hope is when my generation dies all off of the last gasp of these white people trying to hold on to what they thought was theirs, when I look at the young people, they don't see color, they don't see race, they don't see the rapid adoption of homosexual rights in this country here. The thing that took 100, 200 years, we're still fighting to break down black and white barriers here in this country here. The barriers among younger people are breaking down faster than I've ever seen in my lifetime. The acceptance of the other, the integration of us all into one community.
So here's what I'll tell you, and Rashad can speak for himself, but for me, as an illegal immigrant, okay, I do have an issue with illegal immigration. I do have an issue with the lack of provision of a path to naturalization for people that are the dreamers, okay? And in my mind, those two things can coexist. I can have an issue with people entering illegally. I don't have an issue with refugees that have been actually vetted being allowed in, and the two are not the same, okay?
Right.
And I do believe that I am actually hopeful. I think through this discourse that we have, as long as we can continue to have this discourse with some sort of freedom, some amount of freedom of expression, okay, because that's also kind of threatened, right?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Looking back at the history of the United States, I don't see this discourse and this anger and this discussion and all this, you know, opposing points of view as being anything new.
No, it's gone back. The know-nothing parties of the 1840s trying to fight the influx of Irish coming into the country.
Right.
All that. This has happened.
I'm sorry if people thought we were more evolved.
I thought we were, yeah.
Right? But there's a factor called the human condition, and that is DNA and has nothing to do with awareness and evolution.
I thought we were more evolved, but I guess we're going to have to fight these same fights
I will just end in saying, do you agree with that, Rashad?
I mean, I thought we were more evolved, too, but then Trump got elected. So.
Yeah, I think that's what shocked a lot of us.
Yeah. I mean, again, as an independent, I will tell you, okay, there's enough blame to lay on all sides of this, okay, when it comes to the political situation. That's why I try to keep it at an engagement on a community level versus talking about it on the political party side of things, because
everybody has a special interest.
Yeah.
Part of the problem was the Democratic Party,
yeah.
But it's not only the election of Trump, but how people have changed, and people are less receptive of the other on the ground. Like I've never experienced this before. in the past 20 years, except last year when
but I will,
I've seen in front of my eyes.
Amen. I'm with you.
But I will tell you guys both. That if we really
Rod doesn't want to accept that truth.
No, Paul. I'll tell you what I accept as the truth. I accept the truth as that reality that because I remember I lived in the South for a couple of years. I came back here. I was here before. There is something in different parts of the country where this xenophobia, this sense of us and them worrying right. about it. I'm been threatened by an incoming entity that I fear because I don't understand. In some parts of the country, that's a little bit closer to the surface, if not on the surface. So this thing we're talking about that manifested itself in the election of Trump, okay, is not a new phenomena. This is something that is always.
But we didn't know it was still. We didn't know it was as big and deep as it still. We thought it had gotten smaller.
Yeah because we believed our own. We drank our own.
No one imagined that we would have KKK rallies at this age. But
none of my lifetime. I grew up in the. You guys weren't here. I grew up in the other side of this debate, which was black and white. The other group of. People
it's the same debate. It
involuntarily brought over here and change, yes, right, and how we still
same debate,
still fighting colors. that debate. I saw that ugly reality, and I was shocked to see under Obama the rise in racial fighting and racial profiling and all these poor black kids getting shot by police and all this stuff and the rise of all these movements. And the reaction to my friends who still think Black Lives Matter, they're offended by that movement. I said, why? I don't get it. They're not saying Black Lives Matter more. They're saying that in a society where all these kids are getting shot down, whatever they did, whether they ran or resisted or whatever, they were still unarmed and the cops killed them. Mm-hmm. I didn't think I'd live to ever see that again. And this rise of this black-white tension again here that I thought had not gone away but had subsided greatly. Certainly from when I was a kid. And now it's rising back up again. And now we've got all these other fear of all these others.
Minority of the country because of lack of birth rate. Sorry, simple human physics, right? Lack of birth rate is the white minority trying to hold on to dear life like a hanging man.
You got
in the death throes, right? Last kicks of being hung.
Right.
Okay, and not hung in the right way, in a good way. Okay. Basically, the only way that power is going to continue to be consolidated will end up being a form of an apartheid government.
Yes.
And that is not going to happen because you have way too big a country. You have way too many different states and different philosophies. So I do believe in the American experiment. And I think part of this, I hate to use the cliche, but you got to break some eggs sometimes to make an omelet, right? And
right.
where we're at right today is we thought we'd just buy our yolks already pre-refrigerated. And we realized that we actually are going to have to get our hands dirty and maybe get some yolk on ourselves.
I thought we were past a lot of this stuff,
right.
But we're
so
not.
So I'm sorry for you as a generation that really fought for this equality dynamic.
And thought we'd
to find yourself at the twilight of your years, at your swan years,
right.
facing this and the frustration that must have, I think we continue to pay positive energy towards efforts that are closer to home, the ripple effect that you as a stone in your local pond can make, and hope to translate that to the next person and the next person. And with the onset of technology like we have it, your ability to have a positive impact wider is there. You just have to have the conscious awareness to say, this is what I will do.
And clearly your guest has done that. So my applause to you as well for what you've done, the continuation of this. This country was built on refugees. And what makes us an exceptional country, I do believe in American exceptionalism. Barack Obama, despite all the critique, believed in American exceptionalism. He was the embodiment of it. Only in a country like this could a man with that kind of background, image coming from a diverse immigrant background, rise to that position.
Right.
The fact that we welcome people from the world and can integrate them into one tribe called Americans, no matter what they look like, where they come from, is an amazing experiment, and it's what makes us exceptional.
The diversity genie has been let out of the bottle a long time ago.
And it's a good thing.
And it's a good thing.
It's a good thing. It's not a bad thing.
So click your heels in your ruby slippers, make three wishes,
yeah.
Okay, and actually go and embrace a refugee, open yourselves up to different experiences. That is the only way you overcome your fear of the unknown.
We are all refugees. All right.
Thank you, Irshad, for being here. Thanks, Paul, for letting us run over. And I want to thank Monica and Tarek for being on the show earlier. Join us, everybody, next week on Wednesday on The Rad Life. It's never a dull moment.
That's for sure.
Oh, let's get the music up here. That's where I'm supposed to cue the music here. I was getting so carried away.
You have been listening to the Rad Life Radio Show with your host and age explorer, Rad Gontos, brought to you on the one and only OCTalkRadio.net. Join us again next week as we continue our journey of discovery into life's challenges, opportunities, options, and all the latest and greatest things that come with getting older.